Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is the B segment, 1023B, to be specific. Always on the B's are the guests. And we have one of the sensational national treasures for today's guest. Marion Nessel has been driving the conversation about food and nutrition around the world, and especially in the United States. She had prize-winning books, What to Eat and Food Politics, and her blog is exactly of the same name. She's laid out how the food industry focuses on profit. Is it often at odds with public health? And that's obviously an issue deep in my heart as well. She has a wonderful book, short essays, I would say, and Carrie Truman is the person who asked the questions to her in a very provocative way, and Marion spares no problem and no hesitancy in answering them, even more dramatically than Dr. Fauci would answer questions about COVID-19 and the coronavirus. It's tough to be a national treasure in this way, but she is bold and blunt and talks about climate change and food as well. I should tell you, our sponsor is Persona Nutrition. This is another great, I believe, You, the Owner's Manual podcast. We're in our 21st year, actually. 1020 was the anniversary, so we're in our 21st year now. And we're brought to you by Persona Nutrition. You can discover supplements and vitamins personalized to your needs by taking the free online assessment at mypersona.com, mypersona.com. No obligation, and you get to talk to a dietitian to find out, for example, if you feel like you need zinc, you can find out the foods that zinc is in, such as beans are one of my favorites that have zinc. So, Dr. Nessel, how are you holding up in COVID-19 world?
Well, I'm not doing any better than anyone else is, but just trying to stay safe and hiding.
Good. Hiding is a good thing to do at this time. Now, I'm going to ask you some of the questions from your book, and it's a great book, which is called Let's Ask Marion What You Need to Know About the Politics of Food, Nutrition, and Health. So I like the one, is fake meat better for us and the planet than the real thing?
Oh, I wish I knew. I have sort of a complicated view of fake meat. First of all, it's off my radar because one of my food rules is never to eat anything artificial. And I put artificial meats and artificial sweeteners in that category. I think if you don't want to eat meat, you don't have to. It's not an essential nutrient. You can have wonderfully healthy diets without meat. And I don't really understand why people want to eat something that's artificial, that looks like meat but isn't meat. And I've had it explained to me many, many times. People tell me that people who are vegan and don't eat any animal products at all, tell me that they're just so happy to have a wider choice of things that they can eat. And one parent told me that she was just so happy that at last she could take her kids to fast food places and there would be something that they could eat there. So I didn't quite know how to deal with that, but there are lots of people who feel that way, and the people who are producing these products are very concerned about real problems in our food system, what the effect of animal agriculture is on climate change, on the environment generally, the level of pollution that it causes, and the general unkindness to animals. And they feel that these products give you everything that you need, or might want in a meat without having to have it come from an animal. Okay, fine, if that's how you feel, I think that's fine. And I have to say, I've tasted the products. They taste like meat to me. I mean, they've done a really, really good job of, you know, of technology and pulling them together. But if you look at the ingredient lists, they look like what we're now calling ultra-processed foods. These are foods that are heavily processed, don't bear any relation to the ingredients, the original foods that they came from, can't be made in home kitchens, and are industrially produced. So that's what these things are. So if you don't, if you're trying to avoid ultra-processed foods, which is one of the things that nutritionists are advising these days, what do you do about something like this? It's complicated.
So one of the things that I think, and it's not only complicated, but it hasn't been really well studied on what they do to the outcome, health outcomes, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Well, the studies are just starting, and there's one that's been done that demonstrates that some biological marker that is a risk factor for heart disease is lower in people who substitute artificial meats for the real thing. I don't know how important that marker is. I think there'll have to be other studies, but there are lots of people who are doing environmental assessments of what goes into these things, and are trying to figure it out. From one standpoint, reducing the amount of meat that is consumed on average would be very good for health and very good for the for climate change. So I can see, I think that that's an approach that makes sense. But whether these products are good for you, I have no idea. I mean, I look at the ingredient list and I roll my eyes.
So I do similarly. Let's go to a different, and by the way, how did Carrie get to write these great questions? Because there is someone named Carrie, who's the co-author on the book, who wrote these questions in a very wonderful way.
Aren't they great?
Yes. Yeah. And so I've got to tell you, the book is Let's Ask Marion. It is a small red Bible from the University of California Press. And somehow I got the idea that you indulged in food when you were at the University of California, Berkeley, doing your graduate work. Was that true? And is that how we got to have the University of California Press, or was there something else?
Well, it's certainly the sentimental favorite, but I was long out of the University of California when that press offered to publish Food Politics. So that came much later, but I was certainly happy to publish with them. And I've now published 4 books with them, and I have a contract for a 5th. But let me talk about Carrie, because it's actually an interesting story. About 10 years ago, I met her. She was a blogger, a very early blogger, and she blogged under the heading of Eating Liberally. And every now and then, she would shoot me a question. And her questions were wonderful. I mean, they were little mini essays. She's extremely well-informed about food issues. And she would shoot me these questions, and they were so much fun to deal with. I would just whip off answers and send them back to her, and she'd post them on her blog under the heading, Let's Ask Marion. So that's where the title came from. And when University of California Press asked me to do a small book of essays sort of summarizing my thinking about a lot of food issues, I just couldn't imagine how I was going to go about doing that. I had written a column for the San Francisco Chronicle for about 5 years, and it was just torture. It was so hard to do. It was supposed to be a question and answer, but nobody ever asked any questions. So every week or every month, whenever it was, I had to dream up something to write about. I found it very, very difficult. So when I was thinking of doing short essays, I remembered what fun it was to work with Carrie on these things. And so I asked her if she would ask questions, and she agreed. We figured out what she should ask questions about, and she wrote them. It was great. They were fun to answer.
That's wonderful. That it is so good. I can't believe how good it is. The questions are just outstanding. I write a column with Dr. Oz that's syndicated to, I think, 103 newspapers now, or it's mainly their websites, obviously. But with 103, you do get enough questions for 2 questions a week, which is what we do on, it's a daily column, but on Saturdays we answer questions. Why isn't healthy school food a no-brainer? And this is, I can tell you my own efforts at this in the Cleveland and surrounding Cleveland schools that I even called Richard Smucker, the head of Smucker's, and said, why don't you make it whole wheat and crustable and put the crusts on the food? It was like, well, they won't eat it. So go ahead. You've got such a good answer here.
Oh, they certainly will eat it, and I have seen it over and over and over again. The question really came out of the Obama administration and Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign, which was focused on making school food better and healthier. And I always wondered whether when she picked school food as one of the focal areas she was going to be working on as First Lady, whether she thought, you know, this is going to be a terrific bipartisan issue that's going to bring the country together, and it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, everybody wants their kids to eat well, or whether she had any idea of what a political quagmire she was going to jump into. And I've never been sure about that. I read her book, Becoming, and I think she claims in that book not to be very political. So I'm guessing she really had no idea what she was jumping into. And it turned out to be hugely controversial. The kinds of standards, nutrition standards that the Department of Agriculture were putting in were greeted with enthusiasm by people who were really interested in feeding kids healthfully, and greeted with absolute opposition by people who thought this was another example of government outreach that was just going way too far. And I think it's really too bad, because I've been in schools that serve healthy meals to kids, and these are public schools and in very, very poor areas, and the meals are delicious and the kids are eating them. And what I've observed personally is the difference between a school in which the kids eat the food and a school in which the kids refuse to eat it. It depends completely on who the adults are. When I see kids not eating school meals, I want to know where the adults are. Because if you go into a school where the school food service people know the names of the kids, think it's really important for them to eat healthfully, they're interacting with the kids around the food all the time. They're saying, oh, please try it. I made it just for you. Just taste it. If you don't like it, you don't have to eat it, but promise me that you'll just taste a little bit. And the kids respond to this. They love being dealt with personally around these things. And even if the food is mediocre, the kids will eat it if the adults want them to. And I've been in schools where the food was delicious and the kids don't eat it because the adults were great at producing the food but not so great at getting the kids to eat it. But I don't think there's any question that the kids will eat healthy food if it's prepared halfway decently and if everybody in the school thinks it's just great that they do it. And I especially like schools that have garden programs where the kids plant the seeds, grow the food, harvest the food, and then learn how to cook it and prepare it. And I have been in schools in the poorest areas of New York City and watched teenage boys loving eating salads. I tell you, it can be done.
So it can be done, and that's right, but it does, it is, it's like banging against tradition, at least I found, meaning there is so much ingrained tradition and so much cost has been taken out of the system, so that the, at least where we went around, it literally was many of the people who were preparing food for the kids didn't know that a green banana wasn't yet ripe enough, etc. So, I mean, it was really a, we had a heck of a time trying to do that. Let me go to a subject that is really probably one of the most asked questions. Are low-carb diets really better for us?
Better for what? That's my first question.
Well, that's right. So better for your health, or better for the planet, or better for, if you will, your energy level?
Well, there are two kinds of carbohydrates, first of all. There's complex ones and simple ones. The simple ones are sugar and everybody, or sugars, and everybody would be better off not eating too much sugar. The complex ones are starches, and when they're in whole grains, like corn or wheat or whatever, they're fine if you're eating the whole grain. It's when they're refined that they're a problem. But the real issue with carbohydrates, as with anything that you eat, is the calories that come with it. And if you're worried about weight loss, I think the evidence is pretty clear that it doesn't matter what you eat less of. If you eat less energy than you're expending in physical activity and metabolism and so forth, you're going to lose weight. And it doesn't matter what you are not eating more of. But for a lot of people, if they don't eat sugar, they don't take in as many calories. And that's probably helpful.
I want to thank you. We've been talking with Marion Nessel, who wrote the book with Carrie Truman, called Let's Ask Marion. It is a sensational book of, is it only 18 questions? It feels like you cover so much action and so much important things that it seems like there are more than 18. But there are...
Yeah, no, there's six on personal diet, six on community food politics, and six on international food politics, plus an introduction and a conclusion in which I talk about how to advocate for healthier diets.
Actually, I know how I thought about you in Berkeley, because you, one of the comments on the book is from Alice Waters, who is the great chef owner of Chez Panisse, in Berkeley. And when we lived in, my wife and I lived in the San Francisco area for 17 years, we would often go up to the second floor. Probably none of that exists currently, but we'd open, and hopefully it will soon again, but we'd often go up to the second floor, and where you couldn't get a reservation on the first floor, but the second floor was a kind of a informal and come anytime if you can get in like atmosphere. I don't know if that was there when you were there full time.
Absolutely.
And it's one of the great restaurants of all time. So Chez Panisse in Berkeley, Alice Waters writes a beautiful note, but it is true that Marion Nessel is a national treasure. And Let's Ask Marion is the kind of book that you will revere. It's small enough to put in a side pocket for a men's suit or a purse for a woman. And it's a great book to read anytime you have a free moment while waiting in line at 6 feet distance from the next person or however you want to read it. And hopefully we'll get out of the 6 foot line when everyone gets and I hope everyone can get safely immunized shortly. Dr. Nessel, I want to thank you very much. I should say that we are, as usual, sponsored by MyPersona.com. You can go to MyPersona.com and find vitamins and packs, just like pill packs, but they're vitamin packs personalized to you. Our sponsor has been and hopefully will be, and I take my personalized supplements. You can too. You can take the free online assessment and get your recommendations at mypersona.com. I want to thank the 50,000 of you who download us weekly. It keeps us motivated and hopefully you entertained and informed. Mary Nessel, if you're going to buy one book this year to give, and I think this is coming, this 1023A comes out just before the holidays on 12/7/20. So if you're going to buy one book and give it as a gift to a lot of people, Let's Ask Marian is a great gift to give. Thanks very much for downloading us. Caitlin, thanks for engineering. We'll be back next week.